former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What a weekend! We had the Olympics ending with a Mike Breen-like bang in both the men's and women's basketball gold medal games. Preseason football week one is in the books, so you know we have overreactions to get in check. And I am excited to be back. Stormy Bonatoni with you back in the saddle alongside Michael Lombardi. And you hear that laugh. Michael, I've been gone too long. I'm so excited to be back in the loop and get on a schedule here. Football, baby, we are here. Yeah.
I was worried about you. I was going to send out a posse to start looking for you. I was like, what happened to Stormy? Did we lose her somewhere? Did she get lost in Hawaii? But it's great to have you back. We're excited. Look, football is in the books week one. We're moving on to week two in preseason. Yeah. I was a proud American standing up, thanking Steph Curry for what he did and Steve Kerr for their accomplishments. Tremendous. The women's team as well. So, you know, what a great, great weekend it was. I was excited to see all the events, but I'm more excited to have you back in the fold.
Appreciate you. Did not get lost in Hawaii. Did get lost in the sauce there for a while, but I found my way back, and that's what's important. Speaking of the U.S., though, in the Olympics, crushed the medal count. So from a betting perspective, if you wanted to, you know, lay $2,500 to win 100 to win the medal count, then you cash that ticket. But it is that number for a reason. And congrats to U.S. They end up ultimately tying with China for the most gold medals as well, with 40 clutch performances for the women, who, like, we talk about the men's game and Steph Curry, yes, stepping up in a huge moment, but for the women to win, knowing that that France player stepped on the line in that moment, just all of the exhilaration, so much fun. What was your favorite event or a couple of events from the Olympics the past 2 weeks? What'd you like best?
I love Simone Biles. I love the fact just watching her. I love gymnastics. I mean, just they do things with their body that I can't even conceive. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, it's remarkable. I thought the 100 meter, I still don't know who won the 100 meter dash. I really don't. It was that close. It was that much fun to watch. And look, I just really enjoyed the men's basketball. What I loved about it was, you know, these guys are millionaires, multimillionaires, and they're going to get a gold medal, which is great. It's symbolic. But the effort and the pride that they put in to what they did, to me, made me proud to be an American. It made me proud to see how much it was, how important it was for them to represent this country. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Olympics is all about. It's bigger than you. You're going to get the gold medal, but you're doing something for your country. And to me, where we have so much conflict, we have so much divisiveness between other parties, and I'm not to be political, but to be political, it's nice to unite as a nation, which we need to do. And I thought that was really special.
Yeah, and you saw that all over the place, too, because even a guy, for example, like Nikola Jokic, who we all joke about having like no personality and never being happy when he wins NBA Finals MVP, yada, yada, yada. Even he was like losing his mind with excitement and hysteria for the bronze medal. And when you see Steph Curry just put the team on his back the way he did the last two games, yeah, and rise to the occasion in those moments. Also, love for Steph Curry that shot, any other player in the entire world, that's a bad shot. But it's Steph Curry. Oh. And so you're, of course he makes it. Of course he does this.
Yeah. I mean, and look, how about the egos of the players to get out of his way?
Yep.
Like, that's what I love most about it, is they recognize that this guy is going to win the game for us. That he's not trying to be overdramatic, that he's not trying to be a hero when he doesn't need to be a hero. It was, he knew it. He felt it. It was his time. It was his moment. As I tweeted out, great players always play great when greatness is needed. And greatness was needed in that game, because every time we got a lead on France, they came storming back. And if we don't have Curry on that court, yeah, making those ridiculous shots, I don't know if we win that game. And they've closed the gap on us, but let's enjoy the moment. And I think, to me, it's great pride to watch this young man to do it, because he doesn't need that gold medal. He's going in the Basketball Hall of Fame. He's won world championships with the Warriors. I mean, but to me, that's what was so wonderful to watch that. And I thought Steve Kerr, for all the criticism, mm-hmm, that he had to endure, all the noise from the outside, all the noise from the inside in his locker room, I think he did a wonderful job of managing the team, managing the egos, and understanding that, you know what? It's more important to win the goal than it is to make certain players happy.
Absolutely. And I don't think I'm being too prisoner of the moment to say that might be my favorite basketball performance I've ever seen. And for it to come on that stage for your country is remarkable. And I loved the point that you made because I think it's important. The rest of the world is closing the gap on the United States when it comes to this sport. So for them to pull that out in that moment, I thought was critical and just really, really special ending. The picture of Steph Curry in this shot with Victor Wembanyama soaring through the air, just remarkable. Some other events I really personally loved in addition to gymnastics, as you referenced, I mean, seeing the women's 4x400 come out the way they did, that race was over the second leg of that thing. The marathon, I was extremely impressed by those athletes just being able to have the conditioning that they do to run for 25 miles is ridiculous. But so many really cool things. Sad to see it over. But with it being in the rear view, we get to move full force into the National Football League. And the preseason has been pretty interesting to watch. Notably, yesterday, I know you and Femi previewed these games, but we see Jared Stidham start for the Broncos yesterday, yet everybody walked away from that game talking about Bo Nix and raving about the way that he was able to put things together. What did you think of the rookie QB?
Well, I think what we often sometimes lose sight of is coaching matters. Like, I don't want to be, you know, too overstate this, but coaching in the NFL is an art. Quarterback coaching is an extreme art. Bill Walsh would often say very few people can coach the quarterback and even fewer can evaluate him. And he was right. And Sean Payton's one of those guys that can evaluate and coach the quarterback. So for all the experts in the draft Nick world that were questioning Bo Nix for not being very good and being a blown pick and picking him way too early, Sean Payton knows what he's doing. Like, I know he went out there and said, look, you got to trust me, because he had to sell it to people, but I never doubt it for a moment. And I think what you saw is what you're going to see from Bo Nix, a well-coached, well-choreographed script that is going to allow him to have success. He's going to have moments of poor. He's going to make some dumb decisions, but he's not going to make two in a row. He's going to make one in a row, and then he's going to move on. Coaching matters. And I think more than anything, Stormy, what preseason teaches us is who has an onboarding system. I mean, look what he did with Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a Jet fan and you watch that game, now understanding Zach Wilson's started games and the fourth quarter of a preseason game should be easy for you. But Zach Wilson never looked that good. But Zach Wilson never had professional coaching like this. I think that's the key point. I think when you look at Sam Darnold and you look at J.J. McCarthy, you know, that was really good. It was well done. I'm not saying it's going to continue that way, but it looked good. Darnold looked confident. He looked like a leader. Same thing with McCarthy. Michael Penix, that looked good. I don't want to overreact, and I want everybody to calm down in terms of rushing to judgment. But I think what we saw in Caleb Williams, we never saw in Justin Fields. We made it up. We pretended it was going to be there. We said that we had 1,000 excuses why Justin was going to be the leader of the team and the great player. We didn't need to make any excuses with Caleb Williams. And to me, that's what's so good.
No doubt about it. And real quickly, to go back to Bo Nix, his stat line, 15-21 passing, 125 yards, a passing touchdown, flashed some mobility with the 17 rush yards on 3 attempts, keeping plays alive, led 4 scoring drives on 5 series. And because of what you say with Sean Payton and what he's looking for in a quarterback, a big reason why Russell Wilson is not there and they're paying him $39 million not to be there is because he couldn't operate the system the way that Sean Payton wanted that system to be operated. And clearly there's a belief that Bo Nix can step in and do that. Now, as we're talking about all these rookie quarterbacks, we do have up live on your Twitter account right now a poll question for the day. Which rookie quarterback impressed you the most in week one of this NFL preseason? So we'll get the results and we'll discuss this theme as we go throughout the show today, Michael. But for you, who impressed you the most? And don't be shy. You can give me one or two guys if you want.
Well, I think they all impressed me. All four did. I think Caleb Williams will win this thing because Bear fans vote and Bear fans bet money. but he might well deserve to win it, because I think all four of these guys were choreographed perfectly. Jaden Daniels didn't play that much. He called the audible, ran through the 9 route, got him in the end zone, had a nice quarterback run when he played. You know, I thought J.J. McCarthy was very good. I thought his rhythm. See, what I'm looking for in these quarterbacks when they're playing in the preseason, which I didn't see with some guys earlier, is are their arms tied to their feet? Do they have a rhythm to them? You know, Walsh used to talk a lot about quarterbacks and boxers. The boxer needs to move his feet and punch, jab, jab, punch, jab, jab, punch. You know, and I think to me, there's a kind of a ballet to play in quarterback. And I think you see that when you watch these four guys play. Not so much with Jaden Daniels because he didn't play enough, but all the other ones you did. And I think that was really what was good. Whereas sometimes you don't see that with young quarterbacks. Oh, wait a minute, that was a struggle. Trey Lance, for example, held the ball too long, really no rhythm, threw it 43 times. But there really wasn't, you know, guys had to be open before he would let it go. That's not a good sign. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was really encouraged. I thought Michael Penix, even though he never was a great rhythm thrower at Washington, he was a great thrower of the football in terms of how he did it off play action. I thought he looked as well, too.
If you want to join the conversation, go check out that tweet at M. Lombardi NFL. Place your vote for which rookie quarterback impressed you the most in his preseason debut. I mean, Caleb Williams, though, I feel like Bears fans, to your point, just absolutely salivating, because when's the last time they had quarterback play that felt like it was, that looked like that,
it's
right?
It's real.
Yeah.
It's real. They've been, I mean, for the last, for Mitchell Trubisky, just, they've been making it up. They've been trying to make it up. This is real.
They're like, well, wait, I mean, this guy's functional, coherent. You, go ahead.
You have a quarterback, Bear fans. Yep. Now, you have one. Now, you do have an offensive line? I don't know. Is your defensive line good enough? I don't know. But you got a quarterback.
And with that, he has moved to plus 140 in the Offensive Rookie of the Year odds, just mind you, Caleb Williams there. Because you mentioned the Cowboys-Rams game as well, how in the world do you only allow 13 points, you're plus four in the turnover margin, and still lose that game? I know it's preseason, but what are we doing? We are talking Cowboys when we come back. Shocker, news or noise next on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere.
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise. This is noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
All right, Michael, and when we're playing this game of news or noise, it's only natural that we open talking about the Dallas Cowboys. And owners Jerry Jones yesterday got back on the microphone to walk back his comments from last Thursday, where he said there wasn't necessarily a sense of urgency about getting a deal done with CeeDee Lamb. Here's Jerry Jones.
No, there's not that urgency. Now, I understand completely the angst that's happening when you are anxious about and someone says anything about whether you're missed or not. Well, CD, you're missed, okay? But you're not missed out here competing, and it doesn't put any pressure anyplace on us.
Michael, we always count on you in these moments to play GM translator. News or noise, make sense of Jerry for us.
Well, Jerry's simply saying exactly what every good negotiator is saying, is he's not going to allow the holdout to affect his process, his decision making. See, this is what people want. They want, there's got to be anxiousness. You've got to, if you're anxious, you're going to overspend. If you're anxious, you're going to do something stupid. Jerry owns the team, so he doesn't have to have any anxiousness. I mean, he just says, hey, look, I'll pay what I pay. That's a roadblock you don't overcome. You can do what CeeDee Lamb's doing and hold out and prevent your skills from working, which what Emmitt Smith did. He held out two games. Cowboys lost them both. Jerry caved. Okay, there it is. That's how you win this battle. But you're not going to win this battle thinking the media is going to put pressure on him. Are you anxious, Jerry? I own the team. I have a helicopter. I have a 200-foot yacht. I'm not anxious about anything.
I definitely respect where Jerry Jones is coming from in this standpoint, but I also understand CeeDee Lamb trying to say, hey, listen, I was your offense last year. I was number two in the entire league in terms of receiving yards, and you kind of need me right now. I know you're having trouble with the salary cap and structuring that, but that's your problem. That's not my problem, so I'm just going to keep on holding out and doing what I'm doing. What my concern would be, Michael, and I'm curious your opinion on this, when a player like that holds out and isn't there in training camp and isn't getting like in football shape, because football shape and training on your own is a very different thing. Is there concern for health stuff when it comes to CeeDee Lamb getting back out on the field when he ultimately does go out there?
I mean, you know, as a 49er fan, what Debo said about his holdout, how it affected him the next year. You know, what do we usually see? Guy holds out, he comes back. Oh, we're happy. Everybody's happy. Have the press conference. Pull a hamstring a week later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it just goes. It just, you know, when you're not practicing, you're not going through the grind. You're not going through the daily routine. It's hard on you. And I think it affects the team. You know, and you can say, why doesn't the team sign him immediately? Because what fans don't understand is the cap also is a competitive environment. If I overpay by $3 million, I've given my competitors a $3 million advantage on me in the cap. See, nobody translates that. Oh, just pay the guy what he wants. Right. That's Danny O on, at ESPN, at the Worldwide Leader, because he doesn't have to worry about it. He just wants to pay everybody.
No.
Whereas the teams are saying, look, if I give you $5 million above the market, I'm losing out to my competitors. Why should I pay more than someone else does? Now, if you're the Patriots and you have to pay a tax for being bad and people not wanting to come there, because for many years the Patriots were able to pay less because people wanted to come there.
Mm-hmm. Fair point. And week one, by the way, will be here before you know it. The Cowboys do not have a layup in that season opener against the Cleveland Browns. They're getting two in Cleveland, total 44. And another guy looking for a contract right now, quarterback Dak Prescott, who is going to have Myles Garrett running down his throat, I'm sure, that game. He was held out of practice last week with ankle soreness for Dak. It's the same ankle that he injured years ago, the one that he told us was a non-issue and not to worry about on his Cabo trip. News or noise, Dak missing practice with ankle soreness?
Well, I think it is. It's only going to be news when it happens the week before the game. And Dak has come out, and I've read his comments that there's nothing wrong. But missing practice, I mean, if he has some tenderness or arthritis flares up in it, it's early in camp. It really doesn't matter. I mean, look, Aaron Rodgers didn't practice when it rained the other day. So, I mean, did we react to that?
I mean, the world will, I'm sure. I didn't know rain was that impactful for a practice, but okay, yeah,
I mean, teams didn't even play it. I mean, Nick Sirianni said, I didn't play my starters because it was raining. I didn't even know. I went and told my mailman the other day, God bless you. You deliver even when it rains. I mean, look, the Eagle players can't play when it rains.
What can Brown do for you? At least UPS is still out there. That's all that matters. I love it. Okay, so from how about them Cowboys to how about them Buffs, Coach Prime last weekend continues, Michael, to treat the media as if the only way he'll answer questions with them is if they are his biggest fan and biggest cheerleader. Curious your thoughts on this sound from Coach Prime at his media press conference.
Eric Christensen with CBS Sports Colorado.
Tyler, I'm not doing nothing with CBS. Next question.
Joe Rigo, my last question.
Ain't got nothing to do with you. It's above that. Ain't got nothing to do with you. I got love for you. I appreciate you, respect you. Ain't got nothing to do with you. They know what they did.
I'm here in Denver, not national.
You are who you are.
Coach Sean Keeler, the Denver Post. Happy summer, my man.
You don't like us, man. Why do you do this to yourself?
Come on.
You don't like us.
Mark likes me, by the way. Huh? Yeah, yeah. Mark said he likes me.
No,
so
but
that's
you
one.
You don't. You always on attack. Like, what did we do?
Where am I on attack today? Where am I on attack?
Yeah, I'm not gonna give you opportunities to be on attack.
No disrespect, but I'm going to disrespect you. Whenever you lead with no disrespect, I feel like that's always where
there's
we come
disrespect.
Through. What did you think, though,
or
Michael?
All due respect, as Tony Soprano would say, all due respect, you know. But look, I mean, this is about the media is a chocolate blast, right? They're always going to win. And, you know, all this is doing is bringing undue attention onto your program. Look, they've got to play better. They've got to coach better. They've got to do everything better. But you can't win a battle with the media. You just can't. I mean, they can write stories. They can create anything they want to create, and people know it. To me, what you're doing is affecting your messaging to get out. You know, why take it out on the guy from CBS? Get your message out. Say what you want to say. You don't have to answer the questions, but get your message out. Why make it hostile? I think that's a big mistake.
And I did respect the answer from the CBS Denver reporter who's like, national, we're different. Like, they legitimately have nothing to do with local affiliates. So, but
I don't even know what Nashville did to them. Like, that's how bad I am.
Sean Keeler of the Denver Post, the one who is being rejected in the second portion of that soundbite, he reported there's three possibilities here. CBSSports.com ranked Deion as the 15th best coach in the 16-team Big 12. There was another column that pointed that the Buffaloes have an uphill climb to get a bowl with a season win total of 5.5. That seems to be just factual. And then also his son Shiloh's bankruptcy filing, which is again factual. So I don't know. And for somebody who is as boisterous as he is, Michael, I find it very strange that Deion Sanders is like as thin-skinned as he is.
Well, I mean, look, I think here's what happens. If you want to be a preacher and you want to hear a lot of amens, then go into preaching. Mm. But if you're going to be a football coach, ain't nobody going to amen you. Nobody's going to do that, right? So you got to make a decision. You know, if you want to praise the Lord and preach, good. That's wonderful. We need people that do that. But you're a football coach, and your football coach is about leading young men. And you've got to show them in adversity how to lead. You've got to show them how to handle it. How does his players react now when they get asked questions that they don't want to hear? He's the example. See, if I were the president of Colorado, I would not have been happy with that press conference.
I agree.
I would have called Deion on the phone and said, come to my office. We need to sit down. You represent the university. You represent us. You've got to answer questions because that's your messaging. When you do that, when you take that on, it puts us in a hostile environment.
I agree. And while we're talking about facts in the Colorado Buffaloes, good to know the top 25 came out, the AP preseason top 25 in college football. Colorado, not on it. Not a surprise to most people that are watching right now. Browns, their quarterback Deshaun Watson did not play this past weekend. He won't play in Cleveland's second preseason game this week against the Vikings as well. But good news on the injury front. He has been fully cleared for full contact, according to head coach Kevin Stefanski. Michael, news or noise?
No, I think this is news. And I think what's even more news is the fact that the Minnesota Vikings are coming to town. Minnesota, first game against the Raiders, very vanilla defensively, did nothing. Well, they don't want to show anything, right? Brian Flores loves to bring pressure. I think what you're going to see this week when the two teams get together in Cleveland, when the Vikings travel there, I think you're going to see that. And I think Deshaun's going to need to participate in those team grills. Quarterback's going to be in a red jersey. He's not going to be live, so he's not going to get hit. But he's going to need to experience the tempo of the game, the speed of the game. Because let's face it, this guy hasn't played a lot of football. He's played 12 games in 2 years in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 14 touchdown passes, 11 interceptions. You know, Joe Flacco passed for 1,616 yards in five games. Deshaun passed for 1,115 yards in five, in six. So there's a lot of ground they need to be making up.
Michael, I'm going to hit you with one more quickly. Justin Fields played for three series in the Steelers' week one preseason loss to the Texans, completed 5 of 6 attempts for 67 yards, but struggled taking the snap from center, had a couple fumbles. Mike Tomlin said he felt those mistakes negated a lot of the good. News or noise?
That's news. That's what I've said all along about whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh, it's going to be who protects the football. And Justin Fields has had a propensity to fumble the football. Yeah. He's got to correct that.
Has an opportunity, certainly, with Russell Wilson sidelined with that calf. We'll see how much he can take advantage of it. Going to take a quick time out here on the other side of the break. It's been the offseason of the wide receiver, so much so Netflix made an entire series about it. So let's talk some wide receiver head-to-head props when we come back. Don't go anywhere. Michael, we need to have Brent redo that open and have it say 3-time Super Bowl winning executive, Michael Lombardi. We got to pump that up a little bit more. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. We're usually coast to coast, but I'm in Las Vegas, and Michael, we're sharing a coast because you're out there in Washington right now. I haven't even asked you. How's that been?
It's been great. It's been fun to spend time around the University of Washington football program. Coach Belichick's been up here as well. So been good to kind of reconnect with him a little bit and spend some time studying the football team here and looking out at this beautiful lake that I have out of my office window here. Mm-hmm. So it's nice. It's good. And it's good to be back and good to have you back, too.
Yes.
It's good to have you back. We appreciate Ben Wilson and everyone at Femi who, you know, four-game Femi had to come in and fill in for you. You know, when Femi had to go down and meet Jerry Jones, too. It was a busy man. So
yes.
We owe Femi a great gratitude of appreciation.
He's had a lot going on. And, yes, I always owe Femi. I will never be able to give Femi back what he has done for me. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
But I love that, by the way, because, like, Jed Fish's staff out there in Washington, for those who don't know, Steve Belichick is on the staff. You have Brendan Carroll, lots of legacy NFL that is out there. So that's a really, really fun time, no doubt about it.
Not only do we have Brendan Carroll, so we have John Lynch's son, Jake. He's on the staff here. Jack Del Rio's son is on the staff here too. So there's a lot of NFL, a lot of kumbaya singing going on in here. And usually it works out pretty well. So it's been good. It's been fun to hang out with the coaches, and it's invigorating to be in this environment for me, particularly because I work alone. So I'm not often do I see many people other than the great Bill Berman.
Good. I'm glad that you're having a good time out there. And Washington, I'm sure, will be missing a few of their key contributors, including Roma Dunze, as we transition to a little wide receiver talk in the National Football League, Michael. And listen, like, this has been the offseason of the wide receiver. They're being paid more than ever, record-setting contract after record-setting contract. We've got notable holdouts in preseason training camps, and this is a position that is of note across the National Football League, the way that it has been valued. We talked so much last offseason about the devaluation of the running back position. Meanwhile, we're throwing all of these eggs in the wide receiver basket. And right now on DraftKings Sportsbook, there are a lot of head-to-head props that are out there and available in the wide receiver market. I'm sure as people and fans are gearing up for the NFL season, you're thinking about your fantasy team and which wideout you want to draft. So first off, before we get into some of these specific numbers on players, as you watch this opening week of preseason in the NFL, any standout wide receiver performances for you?
Well, I mean, when you
good or
watch
bad.
The
good
game,
or bad.
Well, you know, it's always hard to see the bad, right? Because you got to study the tape, and it's not fair to the young receivers. I think one of the things in college that you look at is they don't see enough of press coverage, right? So you don't see enough of guys that, you know, and so when you get to the pro game and all of a sudden you see more press coverage, and now you've got to adapt to that. So you kind of give it, and then, of course, the quarterback. I mean, Malik Nabers had played 9 plays. He didn't have a ball thrown in his direction. Does that mean he's not a good player? No, that's not the case. I think Burt, and the kid from the Alabama receiver from Cincinnati, who's at Cincinnati, was really good. He was outstanding, and he's going to play, right? So here's what I think you got to understand is if you're in fantasy, you got to figure out, does the guy have a role? Jermaine Burton, it was a 3rd-round pick. All right, last year, okay, so let's go to Cincinnati. Last year, Tyler Boyd, 96 targets, had 67 catches. He averaged 6.8 yards per target, 28 first downs. Now, people say, well, they're going to miss Tyler Boyd. No, they're not. Those numbers are very easy to replace. And if Burton can come through and play on the outside, which is what they plan to do, they want Burton to be on the outside. You know why, Stormy? They want to move Chase inside. Mm-hmm. So Chase can have those Tyreek Hill-type numbers, which is going to be dynamic. When he comes inside and they move him around, he's harder to double. T. Higgins on the outside, Burton on the outside, now Chase inside. How do you double the inside guy? You start motioning him around. You move him from here to there. See, with Tyler Boyd, you knew he was over there. Nobody was scared of Tyler Boyd. He was going to catch the ball and get first downs, maybe, but he wasn't going to put the fear in the defense. Now, with Burton playing really well, Burton will be a good fantasy pick for somebody down the road because he'll catch a lot of deep passes. He may have 3 catches, 80 yards in a game, but he's going to get single coverage out there because Chase is going to get the double.
Okay, good perspective. Let's stick with the theme of Cincinnati then. Let's talk Ja'Marr Chase because there is a head-to-head prop up available right now at DraftKings that puts him head-to-head with Justin Jefferson. Now, it's minus 110 each way, but Jefferson obviously in a different situation. No more Kirk Cousins. He's going to have either J.J. McCarthy or Sam Darnold throwing him the ball. Ja'Marr Chase, as you just mentioned, though, seriously going to remain a threat on the outside, and how will things free him up? We'll see. When you look at those numbers, what comes to mind?
Well, I think Chase could be dynamic this year with just what I laid out there.
Yep.
The fact that Chase becomes an inside slot receiver. What fans don't understand is when you move inside at the receiver position, all of a sudden, all those doubles, the checks, the motions, everything becomes a little bit more complex. And you get to attack the field, right? When you look at receivers' percentage of catch, when you play further away from the ball, the percentage of catch goes way down. Sometimes receivers who were even great receivers, their percentage of catch is 53, 54, 55%, whereas tight ends are at 80%. Why is that? Well, the tight ends are catching the ball in the middle of the field. Wide receivers are catching it outside the numbers. Well, your percentage of catch inside goes way up. It's why Debo Samuel's percentage is high. Mm-hmm. McCaffrey's is high. They're catching the ball inside the numbers all the time. I think that's where Chase is going to be really dynamic. So I would take Chase here. Not that I don't think they get Jefferson the ball. They'll get Jefferson the ball because Kevin O'Connell will get Jefferson the ball. It's the same thing in Denver, right? I think Denver's situation there will be very good for whether it's Marvin Mims, whether it's Cortland Sutton, whether it's Tim Patrick, whomever they decide to play, they'll figure out how to get them the football. Even the tight end. I think the tight end, yeah, Dotch, will have a good season there as well.
A few of these regular season receiving yards head-to-head props also out there. You've got Amon-Ra St. Brown, who got the new contract this offseason, a minus 125 favorite head-to-head with A.J. Brown, even money. Tyreek Hill led the league last year in receiving yards, a minus 135 favorite against the guy who was number 2 in CeeDee Lamb, who we talked a little bit earlier about at plus 105. Thought this last one was interesting too. Marvin Harrison Jr., the rookie with the Arizona Cardinals, same price head-to-head with Davante Adams, someone who on the surface we have talked about as one of the top wide receivers in all of the NFL, but the guy's getting him the football and Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew. How is that going to look? Any of these stand out to you?
I think Harrison Jr. at one minus 110, he's going to get the ball. He's going to have a lot of yards. And you say, well, they're going to double him. I think that Drew Petsick, the offensive coordinator of the Cardinals, is smart enough to move Harrison around, and he'll catch the ball. I think he's going to really help Kyler Murray out. They need to. Look, one of the things about the Arizona Cardinals and Kyler Murray is they have to be able to throw the ball down the field. They've got to make more explosive plays. Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray at 6.5 yards per attempt ain't going to cut it. So they've got to find a way to get the ball down the field, and I think he will do that, and I think Harrison will be the target. Look, Tyreek Hill's a good play no matter what. You know, he's going to make a ton of catches. I worry about CeeDee Lamb staying healthy because of what you just mentioned there. So for me, you know, I like Harrison. I really do. I love Chase. I think Chase, because of the way Burton's developed and the way they like Burton, and Burton, look, mm-hmm. Burton's a big-time receiver. Georgia, then Alabama, makes a lot of plays. I think it's going to make Chase better.
I love that analysis. That's great. And what you said about the CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill head-to-head as well, I think another component of that is what we discussed a little bit earlier, whether this happens or not. I think it's front of mind. Does he hold out and potentially miss a game off the top, or if he's getting back eased in after not having a lot of practice time and football time with his team, how does he look? How much is he getting the ball initially? I think those are all reasonable questions there when you look at some of those head-to-heads. How about from regular season receiving yards to regular season touchdowns? There's a handful of these as well. You got Mike Evans head-to-head with Amon-Ra St. Brown, Justin Jefferson and Garrett Wilson, Tyreek Hill and CeeDee Lamb once again, Michael Pittman Jr. and Debo Samuel. All of those are minus 110 head-to-head. And then you've got this one, DJ Moore minus 120 with Devontae Adams minus 105, the only one that's priced a little bit differently, but any of those just stand out at first blush that you think could be worth a wager out there?
Well, I think Hill versus Lamb. I think Hill gets the ball in the end zone, right? I think Garrett Wilson too. You know, I think Mike Evans is, you know, one of the things I think when the field shrinks, size matters, right? Pittman, big receiver, throw the ball up there. Mike Evans, a lot of alley-oop passes. He catches those. So those are the kind of things you're looking for if you're playing these head-to-head props. You want to be able to see a guy who's going to get the ball into the end zone. Like, for example, you know, Alvin Kamara of the Saints, his touchdown production in the red zone is not very good. Kamara's not going to be a good fantasy pick for anybody this mm-hmm. year because he's trending in the wrong direction. But here's why he's really not a good pick, because when it's touchdown time, Taysom Hill's the running back and Kamara's standing next to the coach. That's what you don't want. You don't want a receiver who's coming off the field. Mike Evans will be on the field. Amon St. Brown might be out there, but they might be in three tight ends with Dan Skipper as the third tight end. So you got to be careful there.
Really interesting points. And I love what you said there about Kamara specifically in fantasy. Maybe he's a guy that you're going to want to avoid this year. If you're looking for anything, props, game sides, information, recaps, we've got it all available at VSiN.com. And we've got a special deal going on right now. If you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, because of this acquisition we did with Musburger Media, we're celebrating VSiN for one more day. You've got an extra day today. If you sign up, you get 3 years of VSiN Pro access for just $350. Guys, that's 75% off the monthly price that it would typically be. It is the final day, though. VSiN.com/special is how you can sign up. You can also email if you're a current subscriber. You want to build on that. Subscribe@VSiN.com. We'll be right back. Thomas Gable, sportsbook director at the Borgata, joining us next. Busy Monday alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you. Live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, which was the host of last week's fourth annual Bet Bash, had a ton of personalities around the sports betting scene, some celebs in-house, including our next guest, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, who joins us now. Thomas, have you recovered from your Vegas trip? How are we doing today?
Yeah, it took me a day. It took me a day to recover. But yeah, after being out there for 4 days and lots of activities, and I'm sorry I missed you, Stormy. I did get in there and saw Femi the one day, but I know you were out of town. But yeah, it was a good week. My friend Richie Bacciolari got into the Hall of Fame there on Friday night at Circa. So that was kind of the culmination of the week there. Getting out there to see Richie go in, and that was a lot of fun. But some interesting panels, and you know, a lot of discussion in the industry about, you know, current topics and surcharges and all kinds mm-hmm. of things that are happening yeah. right now. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, TG, it's good to have you out in Vegas. So as you look over the first weekend, Will you make any adjustments to your power rankings during the regular season of what you saw, perhaps thinking that, okay, we know Jaden Daniels will start and how good Caleb Williams looked?
Not yet. Caleb Williams, I think, ended up taking 17 snaps. And he did, 4-7 passing, 95 yards, had one rush there for 13 yards. Jaden Daniels, also 11 snaps, 2 of 3 for passing, 45 yards, and he rushed for a TD. So, and those are the two guys that, Michael, when I do my power ratings, especially with the quarterbacks, I try to be fair for the rookies. I start them all off at zero when I do my power ratings at the beginning of the season, into preseason there. So they don't come in with any score. That's just the way I've done it for years, and I continue to do it that way until I get some actual NFL data on them. And, unless it's something that's really outstanding in the preseason, I typically stay with that mark until we get some regular season snaps from them. Nothing that I saw that would make me adjust anything so far. The preseason handle's been okay. I mean, you're going to write less just because your limits are smaller. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly people aren't as interested in betting the preseason as they are regular season games. I mean, I think there's still this stigma around the preseason from a betting perspective amongst more casual bettors. Why would you waste your money on something like this? The teams aren't necessarily trying. The starters aren't playing much, if not at all. But we're certainly, from our perspective, you have to be careful because there's a lot of edges to be had mm-hmm. when it comes to the NFL preseason. You see the numbers really bounce around from where they open. And, I mean, when you look at just the line moves from this first full week of the preseason, if you were following line moves, you got killed. You got killed. I think the line moves, went like 1-9. Mm-hmm. And, you have to take into account what actually makes a preseason line move like that and move significantly. So you have respected groups out there that will release a play to their subscribers, and a bunch of people jumping on a game at one time is certainly going to steam a game. You have the news that comes out, whether it's from coaches' press conferences or from local beat reporters, putting out news that causes lines to jump. So you have all this information that's always coming out, in addition to the bets that you're seeing come in. And that's really why you're seeing all these line moves, but they're not always correct. And this past week was exhibit A of that, where if you just kind of followed the scheme, you got your butt handed to you.
Yeah, the Cowboys yesterday, a prime example, bet up from 3.5 to 5.5, and they end up losing outright to the Rams. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata in Atlantic City, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And you're right, betting the NFL preseason has been such a polarizing topic. You're very firmly on one side or on the other. And from a betting perspective, looking from preseason ahead to the NFL regular season, I feel like those of us in the betting community always like to feel like we're not overreacting to things. We're getting ahead of the move, XYZ, what have you. Have you noticed anything from those week 1 preseason games that have impacted other odds for week 1 already? Even though I know we're not seeing a lot of starters and what have you, but we have seen some rookies. Has there been any impact from that standpoint in your view?
No, not too much. We really haven't moved many numbers at all for week 1 lately. And again, The week 1 bets that you are taking, it's typically at this point from casual bettors, and again, we're this far out, so we're weeks away. So again, the limits are smaller. So the more respected players are probably laying off until they can get down more and the limits start rising. So that's really when I think you're going to start to see some line moves there for week 1. We flipped the Vikings and Giants game. Giants were 1-point favorites initially. Now the Vikings are favored by a point. So that the favorite there has flipped. But, you know, for the most part, the line moves for week one have been very muted.
Yeah, how about, you know, the game that caught me a little bit by surprise is Seattle opening weekend. That line against Denver has moved towards Seattle. It was 4.5. Now it's 5. Denver's a dog. And I'm actually thinking Denver's a better team than they're getting credit for.
I think you're going to see, especially, you know, how Bo Nix continues to look. If people are impressed with him in the preseason, I think you might start to see some buyback there on Denver, especially if that number gets to 5.5 or so. I don't think it touches 6. Now, Seattle is a team, though, that has, at least from their future standpoint, they've taken some respected money because I think a lot of people are expecting some big things from them. I think they're expecting a defense to be much improved. Obviously, they have a new head coach, and I think that offense is probably going to run a little bit faster than when Pete Carroll was there. So Seattle is one of these teams that, you know, at least from a respected better, from what we have seen, that we have gotten money on Seattle. And so I'm not surprised that you started to see that line kind of move towards Seattle, but I think at some point you're going to get some buyback there on Denver.
4.5, the number right now, total 42.5. Also wanted to ask you a little bit about the Olympics and Olympic betting, because I swear the Summer Olympics could not come at a better time on the calendar, where we have live events on our television screens as we're waiting for fall sports to get underway and everything. How was the handle from your perspective on the Olympics, and what was the book like in some of those marquee moments? Basketball, obviously, is the first one that comes to mind lately.
Yeah, the basketball was tremendous, especially when you got into the semifinals, and the book was really, really just into these games. I mean, everybody was kind of hanging on these shots, and hats off to Steph Curry. That guy, you know, once again cements his status as the best shooter of all time. But the write on basketball was very good. Actually, soccer was the number one handle sport for us for Olympics. Just beat out men's basketball, but and even women's basketball is very strong. I mean, we did about a quarter of what we do for the men's, right? But I think the fact that the WNBA is as popular as it is this season, that really translated into the write that we did for the women's basketball in the Olympics. So that was really good as well. And the tennis was super strong when that was going, as was the golf. So those were the main sports. The sports where, you know, you typically don't get to see much other than every 4 years, i.e. track and field and swimming and water polo, those sports, you know, the right was minimal compared to the other, I call it the core four sports, which would be tennis, golf, basketball, and soccer for the Olympics.
TG, I'm sure you got a ton of Joel Embiid for MVP based on his dominant performance in the Olympics. I'm sure you've had a
thought about you, Michael. I thought about you watching those games, especially like the early USA games and his performance. Yeah. And then I thought, man, Michael is going to be just
if I could only read some of the texts that I got from people in authority to support my case, TG, we'd break the world. It would be good. But I'm sworn to secrecy. I'm a good Italian.
Unreal. So good. TG, thank you as always. We appreciate you, buddy.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thomas Gable doing great things. Always appreciate his time. By the way, I saw today the 76ers opening the season October 23rd with the Milwaukee Bucks. Michael, get excited. Yeah. We're going to hit the break. We'll be right back.